You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 248.
Hey, everybody. Yes, in fact, it's us, the Family Gamers. We're here to bring you another exciting show. I am your host, Andrew, as always. And I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, who's the real host, Anitra.
That's me, I guess.
And this week, we have a great show planned for you. Our topic this week, and I think for the next couple of non-interview shows, is going to be game schooling, specifically the kinds of things that you did, Anitra, this year with game schooling with our son Asher, our middle child, and some of the things that worked and some of the things that didn't work. So as we go into this summer season, maybe some of you are thinking about homeschooling in the fall. You don't really know what's going to happen. Maybe you're in a place that still has weird rules with COVID and remote and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you just have younger kids and you really haven't settled on what you're going to do when they actually do enter school. And so we thought we would talk about that on the show for a couple of weeks. And then, you know, we'll have the opportunity for some listener feedback and stuff. And we can address those things specifically.
Sure. But first, I know you have a fact for 248.
I do. So, Anitra, a couple of weeks ago, we decided to be not the best parent in the world.
I mean, it depends on your definition.
So we put our youngest to bed, and with our 12-year-old and our 10-year-old, we sat down to watch Spaceballs.
I mean, I think it was worth it. Now they understand some more of the references.
Some of the really dumb jokes that you and I make to each other. Yeah. I think there was actually more swearing in this movie than I remember. So
there was a lot of, don't say that.
Yeah.
And you know not to say that. And that too.
Yeah, that's true. But okay. So if you remember, at the end of Spaceballs, Lone Star doesn't take the million space bucks that he negotiated with King Roland to get for returning Princess Vespa.
Oh, you don't say.
Spoiler alert. The movie's only 30 years old or whatever it is. He just took money for lunch, gas, and tolls. Do you remember this?
I do.
Well, given that we are talking about the fact for episode number 248, do you remember how much he took in space bucks?
He took 248 space bucks.
He took 248 space bucks for lunch, gas, and tolls. He didn't take the million.
No, he did not.
So that is my fun fact this week for episode 248 of the Family Gamers Podcast. The Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
So, speaking of movies, you know that feeling of wanting to finish a movie just because you paid for it, whether it's a rental or you're sitting in the theater? Or when you think you may as well finish a game that's going way too long and everybody is miserable?
So, by the way, for the record, we didn't feel that way about Spaceballs.
No,
so
we did not.
Don't come at us, please.
But when you feel that way of like, I got to get my money's worth out of this, that's the sunk cost fallacy. Just because you've already invested resources into something doesn't tell you if it's worth that next bit of resources to see it through. If you aren't enjoying book one, don't keep going just because it gets really good in book five. If you need a sounding board for your life's financial decisions, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and set up a time to talk to First Move Financial. Thanks again to First Move for sponsoring this episode of the show. So let's talk about what we've been playing this
week. All right. I am excited to get into our topic, but you're right. We should first talk about what we've been playing. Yes, Mom.
All right. The kids are starting to pull out games for their summer challenge, I guess you would call it.
Their self-inflicted summer challenge.
Imposed summer challenge. So we pulled out Via Magica and played that recently.
Cool.
It's definitely a game that I like playing better in person with three or four or five people than playing it on BGA. It just, there's no personality to it on BGA. It's not bad, but it's one of those games you sit around, you talk while you're playing. It's not a particularly heavy game, and only one person is making decisions at a time, usually.
Right.
I also played and won a solo game of Mass Transit.
Yeah, you posted about this because it was the first time anybody has ever won in this house.
I was excited. Yeah. Asher has since played solo, and he also managed to win playing solo. So I think it's just that little bit easier when you're not having to plan around other people's
decisions. Yeah, well, the nice thing about it is you make every decision, or every decision is basically a perfect information decision. So
right.
You can probably plan a little bit better in that way, so that's good. I actually played a couple of games, one with you, one with Asher, of the game Face to Face. So this is a two-player head-to-head version of the game.
Yeah, so you're trying to make an ascending pile of cards and a descending pile of cards. Your goal is to get rid of all of your cards.
Right. So it was really interesting the way this works out, because there's a lot of need to kind of like hedge your expectations as you're going along. Like if you sell out for all high cards or all low cards or something like that, you may find yourself kind of stuck if one mm-hmm. of the stacks of cards has gone past the stuff that's in your hand.
Yes.
And so it's, I don't know, it's an interesting game in the sense that it's incredibly simple, but you have to put a bunch of, like, you have it. How do I explain this? So you know how with Tidal Blades, there's like all this stuff that you have to keep in your head and you have to kind of manage all these things at the same time, and it's really, really hard?
Yes.
The game is like the complete opposite, where it's incredibly simple, but you need to force yourself to keep a bunch of options open.
Yes.
With relatively small amount of stuff, instead of Tidal Blades, where everything is complicated and so you're trying to simplify it in your head. It's like the opposite. Does that make sense?
Yes, you need to keep your options open. And I found out why this is an issue because I ended up near the end of the game. I had a handful of cards I could not play. Not just I closed off one way of playing them. I had closed off both ways of playing these particular cards. And so even though I had a hand of five, I only had one or two cards every turn that I could play. Mm-hmm. And I had to be super careful about doing that so that I could continue to play cards at all.
Right. Well, I don't know if you remember, so this is a game that I squeaked out a victory. Like, I managed to sequence it so that I could basically dump my hand at the end of the game. But if you remember in the middle, there was a point at which I played like four out of the six cards in my hand. But then the next time when I drew a card or two or whatever to fill back up to what I was supposed to be at, I looked down and I realized,
oh no,
I had to go from like, I think I had to go from like 48 down to like 22.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was a huge jump.
Yeah.
Because I had dumped all these cards out on the turn before, whereas I should have held one or two of those back to keep myself going, to give myself some running room, because obviously I didn't know what was going to come from the face down deck.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's a really interesting game in that way because it is so simple and it's fun, but it's also like it's
that cerebral kind of.
Yeah, but it's not like cerebral like Fruit Passion where I was like intellectually exhausted at the end of the game.
It's intense the same way that like Voltage is intense.
Okay, sure.
This is one we've brought up before that mm-hmm. I think it's actually made by Hasbro or something like that.
I think it's Mattel? Actually, but you know, whatever.
But it's this two player, if you give any ground, you're in big trouble, but you have to work back and forth. Because that's the only way you can play the game.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it for something that's incredibly simple, it's actually pretty interesting the way that your mind has to craft the sequencing
to make it work out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's the game Face to Face from Pandasaurus.
We are still playing a lot of Block Ness,
for which
we put a review up on Friday.
We did.
It's a review where you actually see my face and Asher's face. Crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, Claire really, really likes Block Ness a lot. So she asked to play it a lot.
Yeah. And I am always happy to play a game that she asks for and wants to play.
That's right. So we got in a few games from Haba this week,
mm-hmm.
which is always exciting. And one of those was a game called Hammer Time.
Oh, man.
Whoa,
Hammer Time.
Whoa. Stop. Hammer Time. Sorry. Anyway.
You're not sorry.
I'm not sorry. So I played Hammer Time with Asher. Hammer Time reminds me a lot of Dragon's Breath. So the way the game works is you take the box and there's a like neoprene mat that actually is sticky on one side and you stick it to the bottom of the box.
Okay.
and you put all these crystals, just heap them up on the box.
Okay.
Okay, so, all right, already a point in its favor. It's using the box as part of the game. I like it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you take a hammer and you hit the side of the box.
And you want until to get
crystals
off?
Until crystals fall off.
Sure.
Now, if more than, I think it's 6 crystals, maybe 8 crystals, if more than that many fall off, you've awoken the dragon or something like that, and you have to put them all back. So you actually, you don't want to like rail on this thing.
Yeah, you want to tap it gently.
Right.
Sure.
And so you have mine carts in front of you with certain gem requirements on them. And basically you're hitting it and gems are falling off and you're fulfilling your requirements. There's also like kind of assignments in front of you. And if the requirements that you fulfill the requirements to complete the mine cart. And if you also complete an assignment, you get like a little bonus thing. And okay. I think once all the assignments are gone, the game is over. I don't remember what the end game is, but it's something like that. Reminds me, unsurprisingly, of the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs game.
Mining game, yep.
Whatever that game was called. I don't remember that we reviewed a while ago. It's not a bag pull, so it's obviously a little bit different, but some of the other mechanics where you're, you know, trying to fulfill these requirements and all this kind of stuff is very similar. But obviously, it's simplified a little bit because this is a hobby game for younger ages.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can already see where there's a little bit of similarity with Dragon's Breath there. You're trying to hit the box with the hammer in a certain way so that certain crystals fall off. Like, if you look at it... So a lot of the times when I was hitting the box, I was actually reaching around to the other side and kind of tapping it a little bit towards me,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
which would
mm-hmm.
cause the gems that were on the other side near Asher to fall off. So it really depends on which gems you want to have fall off, where you hit the thing. And it's not like you hit the box one time with the hammer and you're done. You hit it until some gems fall off.
Sure.
So you can really kind of gently tap your way to what you want. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But that's Hammer Time from Haba. It's a cute little game. This is not like a world changer or anything like that. I don't think this is not blowing me away, but it is certainly fun. It does a good job. And I like the fact that it is encouraging this whole hitting the box thing with the hammer thing, but discouraging slam the box with the hammer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good. It reminds me a little bit of Dragon's Breath and a little tiny bit of Boom Bang Gold, because there's like impact and you're trying to make something happen. I kind of feel that too. I mean, plus that's another Haba game. So yeah, so that's Hammer Time from Haba.
Nice. I can't wait to try that one out.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of new games, we also got in a game for review called Robots Ate Our Pizza.
Mm, did you get to play this?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So we tried this out. This is a cooperative game from a very small publisher called Donahoe Games. So in Robots Ate Our Pizza, it's basically a drafting game or a pick and pass game. You're picking cards out of your hand and then passing your hand to the next player. But first of all, it's cooperative. And second of all, the goal changes each round. So the first time we played, you wanted to get a very high score as a group. The second round, you wanted to get a very low score as a group. I think it was the third or the fourth round, you wanted a very big difference between the highest scoring person and the lowest scoring person. So all of these aspects go into your kind of set collection, or sometimes set discollection, set avoidance, as you're passing the cards around. It's a really interesting idea. It's a cheap little card game. I am really looking forward to playing it a bunch more so that I can review it for all of you.
Awesome. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to play. I don't know what I was. Was that the night I was working late or something? I don't know.
We actually played it as part of our school day.
Oh, you and your school days.
I know. Another new game that we played during the school day was Ubongo 3D. From Cosmos.
Yeah, I played a little bit of this solo last night. Okay.
This is not actually a new game, but it's new to us.
Right.
So, really enjoying it. I've played some other of the Ubongo variants from Cosmos. I was not super impressed by them. Ubongo 3D is a little bit different. The scoring is interesting and adds some randomness in there, so it's not just one person beating down all the rest. And the puzzle levels, the easy, the medium, medium hard, and the hard, are very interestingly different. But what happens all the time is you flip over a card, somebody rolls a die, and the die tells you which of the possible puzzle pieces you need to use this time to fill in the shape on your card.
Yeah, so every card has a shape on it with a certain, I mean, it's some kind of polyomino shape.
Yeah.
And every single player has 8 pieces. There's two in each of four colors.
Yeah, but they're eight unique pieces.
They're all different. And so, again, someone rolls a die, and every card has two different, basically, solution sets. Even though it's one picture, there's the 1 to 3 has some pieces that you use, or the 4 to 6, or something different at different difficulty levels.
Yeah, it depends on the difficulty level. I was doing the yellow, which is the second difficulty level, and most of the cards had 4 or 5 different possibilities.
Really impressive. Yeah. So what you end up doing is using these 3D pieces that you have. They have to fit into the two-dimensional shape that's on the card. So for all the ones that I was doing, it was always the full shape was filled in for 2 layers.
Same.
I don't know if they're always 2 filled in or if it's something different, maybe at harder difficulty levels, but
I mean,
it's
for
a really
the green,
neat game.
For the green and the yellow, it definitely appears to always be completely filled in 2 levels worth.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to trying some of the harder ones and just feeling my brain leak out of my ears. I have a feeling that's going to happen.
I do definitely have that brain leaky feel in playing it, but I really appreciate that the die roll means that even with a fairly limited number of cards, there's more cards than I expected, but even with a fairly limited set, it's really not exactly the same puzzles every time.
Right.
So,
yeah, this game originally came out in 2009, according to BGG, but I'm guessing it just hasn't come to the States, or maybe Cosmos didn't have the license for it or something.
I'm
not really sure. But the copy we have is technically, I think it's either an early production or a pre-production copy. It's coming out later this year. So that's Ubongo 3D from Cosmos. The last thing that I have on my list is Space Explorers from 25th Century Games. We've talked about this before. We played this during our romantic board game getaway.
Yes. Hey,
back in January, I guess it was. It was forever ago. But we hadn't played it at more than 2 players yet. I think you played it with Asher, but that was still 2 players.
So yes, I've played it 2 players a couple of times.
3 player. I don't feel like adding a 3rd player made it significantly different. I felt like it stayed pretty close to the same game.
Pretty close. I feel like in the game we played, I felt really shut out because you did really well and I didn't go directly after you. I went before you. So you did really well and sometimes left some stuff behind for Claire, the next person to take. And then every time it got around to me, I was like, oh, look, I have no options again. So I don't think that's specifically to 3 player, but I think it's more likely to be able to happen in a 3 or 4 player scenario.
Well, you know, something that we have to be aware of here, cognizant of, is this game went through development at 25th Century Games. So did Kingswood, which had the same problem.
Yeah.
So there might be a similarity there between these two games in that 3 players is just really tough. I mean, this kind of issue with one player just kind of really feeling like they're in trouble a lot, I mean, it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, games like this, where there really isn't like rounds with first players that can potentially change, struggle with this a lot because it's always the player that goes before the first player that has trouble, which is why it's so important in many games to change who the first player is.
Yeah. In this case, technically, I was the first player in the round, but that meant that, especially as we approached the end of the game, I knew I was in trouble because one of you two was going to finish the game, and I was not going to get another chance to take any more turns.
Right, but what I'm saying is, mechanically, that first player thing,
yeah,
in a game like this, where there's not rounds that you finish, and there's the end round, and then you begin the next round, and there's the start player again. Like, there was the start player at the beginning of the game, and then after that, it was irrelevant.
Yeah.
And in a game like this, because that first player mechanic swapping that thing around doesn't ever happen, it's whoever is behind the person who's in the lead is in trouble. And that was the issue that we dealt with in this, at least in this particular play session, was there was no way you could catch up with me. And I was just able
you steamrolled.
Pasted both of you. And it really was a function of probably the fact that we had a less skilled player going right after me. So she couldn't position things in such a way that it would cause problems for me because I was 2 people away from
her. She could cause problems for me, but she couldn't cause problems for you.
Right. And she just doesn't have that next level strategy. And that's fine.
And that's
fine. It's part of gamer development or whatever. I mean, I'm not trying to knock on Claire. But I'll be interested to see with this game, even if we go to four players or whatever, if that runaway leader thing is a problem, because I'm really, really curious about it. I really like this game. I love
I do.
The feeling of this game. I like the theme. I mean, I know that at its core, it's just a set collection game, right? It is.
Yeah, it is.
But it just, I mean, they nailed that concept of like that 60s, 70s space race feel, and the art is so good, and the colors are so good, and a lot of cards have special powers, but they're that player aid that just flat out says, this card number, this is what their special power is. Like, it's okay if you don't pick up on the iconography because you have a cheat sheet in front of you. And I love that about this game. I mean, I'm the kind of person who, like, even with the sound is on, I still want the subtitles on just in case I don't hear something right. Because just another way to make sure, like, I'm not a belt and suspenders guy, but I mean, it's that kind of idea, you know?
It is.
I don't know. I really appreciated it. I thought they did so much really, really well. It would be a bummer if this is a problem that we have to run into with this game. And I don't know if it's a development flaw for 25th Century. I have no idea.
We've only played it at three players the one time. Right. So we are withholding judgment until
play
it more.
Absolutely. Yeah. But this game is really fun. It's probably one of my favorite games that they've developed.
Sure. So we've actually played two more games, which should be on your list too, because you played them both.
Oh, I'm terrible. I forget these things. That's why NHL has so many more games played in BG Stats than I do.
In part.
Yeah.
So we tried out Mega Mouth.
Oh, I guess we did, yeah.
This game was fine. It is a party-style guessing game.
And it feels like a party-style guessing game.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot to say about it. Nothing bad about it. It was fine.
It was fine.
We also played some Couture's, and this is the first time that we've played Couture's with more than two players.
I can't believe I lost. I really thought I like kind of had it.
You were real close. I mean, I stunk it up big time, and you lost by 1 point. So I think you're in good shape. Mm-hmm. Again, with Couture's, I'm a little surprised that it didn't feel more different with three players. It feels a little long, but I think maybe that is our style of playing it, because I've definitely played it and looked at my options and been like, I could end the game a lot sooner, but I have almost no points. It's not worth it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting dynamic. There's a lot of these kinds of games where end game is not fixed, right? And you can kind of end it whenever you want to, but it's always a guess because you don't know what other people really have.
Yeah, Couture's is totally a guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, that part's interesting.
We're still working on a review for Couture's, but my short version review of it would be, this is a good filler game for people and groups who like really meaty games.
Sure. Yeah, that's, I would agree with that.
Generally speaking, I would not call this a family game unless your family likes really meaty games. There is just so much going on, even though you only have three cards in hand and you're only playing one card on a turn.
I agree with you. There's something about this game that I don't want to say it feels flux-like, but this game can pivot super fast.
Well, it can, because it depends on the cards that come up, and as cards get played into columns, things can change really quickly.
Right.
Values can go from high to zero, values can go from one and get really high, and it depends on the combination you have, and what you're drawing, and what gets played.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot.
That, I think, is it.
Okay, well, thanks for informing me about what I've been playing. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. I hope you appreciate it.
Well, I mean, look, as the promise of summer comes ever closer, I have this hope that I will play more games.
It's a nice hope to have. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we welcome our new members to the community before we take a break?
Okay, let's do that then.
All right.
As always, we want to welcome the new members that are in our Facebook community. The easiest way to get there is to go to thefamilygamers.com/community or look for The Family Gamers Community on Facebook. So, over the last 2 weeks, our new members are Jacqueline Bixby, welcome.
Eric Vogel, welcome.
Danielle Lima.
Allison Jessup.
And Amanda Laney. We're so glad to have you guys as part of the community.
Yep, we are, and I'm a little jealous. You got welcomed by Danny K on Facebook, so that's pretty cool. But we're glad that you are in the community. We'd love to share some of what we've been doing with you. We would love it if you would share some of what you've been playing with your kids, with us, and with the rest of the community. And with that, I think we're going to take a quick break.
All right.
When we come back, we are going to talk about
game schooling.
We'll be right back.
mysterious lake monsters have finally revealed themselves. There's only one problem, though. The lake is not big enough to hold them all. Who can win control of the lake?
This is a snap review for Block Ness.
Block Ness is an area control game designed by Laurent Escoffier and published by Blue Orange. It's really tactile, and it works in three dimensions, which is really cool.
2 to 4 people can play in about 15 minutes. It's best for ages 8 and up, although kids a bit younger can play too. So Mom, let's talk about the art.
The toy factor on this game is huge. Simon Douchy and Dominique Breton have made an excellent lake surface and these really cool sea serpent monsters that are plastic. The sea serpents fit really nicely into the holes on the board. And each of the four types is distinct, not just in its color, but also in the subtle patterns that run across each segment of each type of monster. So, Asher, let's talk about the mechanics and how you play the game.
After getting out all the pieces, put the board back in the box. This becomes your play area, with plenty of room to poke the pegs of the sea monsters into the holes on the board. Find your starting monster. It's the one with the least height, and put it somewhere near the middle of the board. Now each player takes turns adding on to their own monster.
Each turn, you add a new segment, adding on to either the head or the tail of your monster. You're allowed to cross over any serpent's body, but never underneath.
And you can't cross anyone else's head or tail, either. If you can't place any more segments, you pass. When all players have passed, whoever has the least body segments unplayed is the winner. If there's a tie, the player whose monster has a higher head wins.
So Asher, let's talk about what we expected when we first picked up Block Ness.
It looked like a lot of fun even before we knew how to play. The plastic monster pieces invite you to pick them up and play around with them.
Because these pieces looked so much like a toy, I wondered if the game would offer interesting choices, or if it was mostly just going to be about making fun designs and putting your sea serpent pieces into the board. But I was surprised. First, by the attention to detail. Each sea monster not only has a different design, but its selection of pieces is a little bit different. You can see that even with the starting pieces, that some are longer and some are shorter. Every sea monster has wide pieces, narrow pieces, short pieces, tall pieces. They've all got some kind of a range there, but every monster's piece selection is a little bit different than any other monster. The spatial relations required in this game were actually really challenging for most players. It's tough to see exactly where your pieces are going to fit without taking them and literally putting them onto the board.
It plays about the same with all player counts, because with a higher player count, there's more space on the board that you can use.
We were also surprised to find that planning helps you, for sure, but it feels like there's a lot of luck. There's no hidden information at all, but it's difficult for most people to picture how to fit their own pieces and how to allow for other people's moves that they can't always predict. Finally, we were pleasantly surprised that kids win this game just as often as adults do. Turns out kids have better spatial planning than adults. So Asher, what do you think? Would we recommend this game?
Block Ness is fun and fast, and it's really easy to understand. Kids younger than 8 may struggle a little bit with the placement rules, but other than that, it's a good game.
So what do you think we should rate Block Ness?
I think we should give it 4.5 Loch Ness monsters out of 5.
And that's Block Ness in a snap.
And we're back. So we're going to talk a little bit about game schooling and how that worked for me and Asher this year.
Mm-hmm.
But first, we have some back talk.
We do. So we got a message. We got an email earlier this week from Daniel who says, "Well, you have inspired my son and I to start a podcast. I won't bore you with the URL because I'm not here to ask you to shill for us. But by the way, please share it with us. I would like to listen at a minimum, and I would like to share it in the Family Gamers community. There is room for all of us."
There is.
So, Daniel and Daniel Jr. I don't know your name. I'm sorry. he finishes, but thanks for making content and inspiring us to do the same. Absolutely. I mean, that's why we're here.
Yeah, again, totally.
Not a competition. We're more than happy to mention members of the Family Gamers community who are doing some fun, cool stuff. And, you know, if we weren't, there'd be a couple people that we would have kicked out of the community right now. So...
Yeah, no kidding.
Feel free to share. And, you know, all we really ask with regards to sharing in the community, stuff like that, is that you're also just a participating member of the community. You know, we don't really want people to drop in and only drop links to their content and not engage with the community at all. So just be part of the community, and we're more than happy to share what cool stuff you're doing. So we're glad that we inspire you. We hope that you have a great time doing this. And if you need any audio recommendations, let me know. So,
all right. Sounds like a plan.
All right. On to our show topic. So let's talk about this thing, this game schooling thing. So we have had some teachers on the show before who have talked about gaming and gaming in the classroom and gaming clubs and even a little bit of this kind of game schooling concept. But for us, it really hit us smack dab in the face, starting with this past year after this hybrid schooling, well, fully remote schooling for the end of the 2019-2020 school year. Really, it went okay for two of our kids, but one of our kids, like, really already wasn't loving school anyway, and then the hybrid schooling, remote schooling thing was just a disaster.
Yeah, so we decided to homeschool Asher this past year because that virtual school thing was just not really working for him. It was, the schoolwork was boring. It took up a ton of time while being boring, and he felt like he wasn't really learning anything. So without the other benefits of in-person school, it seemed kind of pointless. So now we're homeschooling for a while.
Especially since we knew that they were going to be home. It's right. Not like we didn't know whether or not they were going back when we made the decision to homeschool them. You know, we knew that at least for half the year, it was going to be pretty much a fully remote situation. And so we didn't want to put him through that misery. And so we sat down and talked to him. And we said, listen, you know, this is the pros and cons of this. And, you know, your friends that, you know, you have at school, you're not going to see them when we do go back if you're homeschooled. And, you know, we talked about it with him because, I mean, obviously it's a huge part of his life. And so he ended up opting for homeschooling. And of course, as the Family Gamers, who would we be if we did not incorporate gaming into that experience?
Well, and especially because Asher loves playing board games.
Right. He's our gamer kid. Like, it's just how it is.
It was just a natural fit. However, this was challenging for me on a whole bunch of levels. One of them is that this may surprise you, but I am not a very organized person. I mean, it's not a surprise to Andrew, but maybe to you, the listener, it's a surprise.
It is not a surprise to me.
I am not a well-organized person. And being like, okay, educate this kid. You know, they should know everything that a fourth grader should know. I was kind of like, I'm not sure what that looks like at home.
So game schooling does a whole lot of things, right? And some of them are exactly what you would expect. Escape from the mundane, right? Like escape from textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's super useful. And in the classroom, in school, you know,
quote unquote, real school,
public school, whatever, they do this with things like field trips, right? Which are also valid.
Yeah. And which I would have loved to do more of this year, but we couldn't because everything was closed.
Right. Which is the problem. But obviously, there are ways around this. There are things to do. And games were part of that solution.
We also had the interesting challenge, unlike other homeschooling parents I know, we weren't starting with a, you know, preschooler or kindergartner. We were starting with a fourth grader. So I didn't have a lot of practice doing homeschooling. He didn't have a lot of practice being a student in a class of one. So there was a lot of learning for both of us, and games provided one tool in my toolbox to say, okay, we're learning, but it doesn't need to be classroom style all the time.
So let's do it like this. I am the interviewer, you are the interviewee. How does that sound?
That works for me.
So we'll do this a little bit, and then I think we'll talk about like math and like language arts.
That would be what I called the boring parts.
The boring parts.
In my series that I wrote.
So what surprised you the most about incorporating games into game schooling with Asher?
What surprised me the most was the areas in which it helped.
Okay. Expand.
I really thought that putting games into part of our school day was going to help a lot with math practice and with history. And it's not that they didn't help at all in those areas, but it was pretty minor, honestly. Like, history, we mostly read textbooks and talked about stuff together.
Okay.
Math was worksheets. Like, that was where the majority of the practice came in.
Sure.
Science was the area where using games really made it click and connect way better.
Okay. And, I mean, part of that is going to be a commentary on genius games because they're geniuses.
They are.
I mean, they're amazing at what they do.
They are amazing at their games.
So, what did you like the most about incorporating games into doing things with homeschooling?
What did I like the most? I think there were a couple of things. One is that games were less of an environment of you're the learner and I'm the teacher, and was instead sort of a, I know a little more than you, I'll share my knowledge, but we're going to have this experience together.
Sure. Yeah, there's something, there's kind of a built-in antagonism when you have that teacher-student relationship, like the one in charge and the one who is the underling kind of thing, right? Like, there's a almost like a built-in like wall or antagonism there when you have that kind of a relationship on top of mom and son, right? Which,
yeah.
You know, so I can definitely understand how you're pulling yourself down and you're bringing him up a little bit. So now you're almost like equals because you're sitting on the opposite side of the table playing a game.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. And it also meant that some of the games where I had been pushing it to be like, hey, this is a cool thing and you should learn more about it, turned back into that relationship of, we're going to play this because I'm the teacher and I say so, instead of a, hey, this is one way we can keep working on this thing we're already working on.
Do you think that it was a little bit of an escape for him to be able to offload some of his learning into like a gaming experience? Or do you think he was just like, whatever, it's not school time, it's game time?
That's a really good question. Maybe we should ask him that. But I think sometimes it was just an escape. But most of the time it was a, okay, mom says this is part of the school day. You know, I'm going to go through with it and see what we learn.
I suspect there were some times, because every time I would come upstairs and you guys were playing something, I'd be like, dude, I am so jealous. I would much rather be playing games than working.
And usually then he's like, hee.
Exactly. And he gets that little, I feel special, which yeah. I think really kind of pumped his tires a little bit. So
I think it did.
All right. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we switch gears? You said earlier something that I think was very interesting, because I think a lot of people, when they think, oh, we're going to do game schooling, we're going to use games to help with our learning and this and that and the other thing, like, math is one of the first things that comes to mind.
Right. And that's not a bad thing. It's just that we have a kid who's already pretty proficient at arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some games in mind that deal with higher math concepts and a lot that deal with arithmetic. And not a lot that sit in that middle ground of fractions and early geometry and stuff like that.
Okay, so when you say that math wasn't something that you were able to really attack with board games, that's because he's good with arithmetic already.
Yeah, it's because of the age range we're at and the skill level we're at.
Okay.
Not that games are not good for math. Plenty of games are great for math.
Right, right. Well, and that's why I thought it was so interesting that you said that. So let's get into that, though. Let's explore games for math. This is something that you talked about in your fourth entry in the game schooling series that's on the website.
Yeah, so one that I will recommend for nearly any age is King Domino.
Mm-hmm.
So we did use this because King Domino can reinforce multiplication. And that is a skill that still needs some extra help, shall we say. Not bad, but could be better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the things I love about King Domino is that it's simple enough that you can introduce this concept of multiplication to like a five-year-old. You know, they're going to have trouble actually doing it, but they can start to see how multiplication works.
Okay.
If you count up by whatever number of crowns you have, you know, count by twos, count by threes, count by fours, whatever. And that's almost a magical feeling to all of a sudden it clicks. This is what multiplication is. It's groups of numbers, and it's a faster way to count up these groups of numbers.
Sure.
So that's pretty cool. Other than that, our big thing this year was fractions. Like I said, there are some options out there. Split and choose games can be really helpful for fractions. Not that it's a main focus of the game, but it's a tool you can use to talk about fractions again. So something like a New York slice or a Sunday split. Hey, what fraction of the whole is this that you've cut out and that you're choosing for yourself?
Right. So that's an interesting idea. I mean, that is almost completely tangential to the game itself.
Correct.
But because you have a primary I split, you choose mechanic in place, you can talk about the fractions there and say, look, it doesn't have to be fair because the contents of the cards is changing the weighting.
Right. It's not necessarily equal fractions because what you're picking is not equal. You know,
right.
One really good thing can outweigh several not sure. so good things.
Yeah. You also talk about sequencing, which I think is something that we've seen in a lot of games. Most recently, we've been playing a lot of Lucky Numbers, which is just a fantastic light filler game that we really, really enjoy. We recently mm-hmm. released a review for this. This has two-way sequencing.
Which, my goodness, can hurt your brain.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you know, it's not hard to accidentally cheat in this game.
which I've done. In fact, I did when I was trying to take pictures right. for the review.
It's so funny.
And then I caught myself before I published the pictures, and I went back and said, hey, this game I played with you, I cheated. I'm sorry.
But there's lots of games that we've talked about. We talked about Didgeridoo. We've talked about Quingo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot.
Quix does it. Yeah. Racco does it, which is a game that I played as a kid growing up. Sequencing is one of those skills that you're actually going to come back to over and over again as you get higher in math, which I had not thought about a lot until we were playing these games.
Well, and if you're like me, you're going to be sequencing the cards that are in your hand whenever you have a hand of cards and things like
oh,
this.
Oh, sure.
So it's always going to be something that you practice in this constant iterative way, right? It's just always around.
Sure, but that's usually how I think about sequencing. It's like, we learn to count, you learn how to sequence numbers. It's just like learning how to alphabetize things. You get there and then you know how to do it and then it's fine. You just, whatever.
Yep.
But the thing is that sequencing then turns into some other math concepts as you go along. How big is the space between these numbers? In our official math curriculum this year, we talked a little bit about averaging, and I introduced the concepts of mean and median and why those are different. But sequencing is a really important skill along the way for that. For anyone who needs a refresher, the difference between an average, which in math is called a mean, and a median, the average is literally just add everything together, divide by the number of things you have, that's your average. The median is if you line all of your numbers up in order, sequentially, what is the number that is in the middle? That's a different concept and can have shades of meaning in there. It's a little advanced to talk about with a fourth grader, but I felt like it was a good time to introduce it. And sequencing really comes into play there. Sequencing also comes into play with talking about games like Lucky Numbers and how you can shape your luck, what your probability is when combined with sequencing. If you can make a bigger gap between numbers, there's a higher probability that you can fill that gap.
Yep, I totally agree with you. Another great thing that you use when exploring mathematical concepts, and this is that really primitive geometry stuff, is polyominoes.
Yeah, so, I mean, polyominoes, tangram-type games. This is geometry, kind of. I mean, it's not the geometry that you're going to do in your textbook curriculum, but it is geometry. It's area and how things cover an area. Baron Park is a great example of this because you can look at how many squares big any particular type of shape is.
Mm-hmm.
Near the end of our curriculum this year, we were talking about how to measure area, literally, you know, and the difference between square inches and square feet. But square units in general is a concept that you start talking about. Oh, look, polyominoes are made up of squares.
Right.
Maybe we can talk about it starting there.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I mean, any excuse to play a polyomino game is okay in my book.
So I know, right?
I'm there, right? Absolutely. All right, so that's math. Let's talk a little bit about English and language arts, the other boring thing. Now, I think we talked a little bit about this recently because we did a Play This, Not That, where we talked about, I think, Scrabble and Bananagrams.
And Bananagrams, yeah.
And obviously, Bananagrams is going to play pretty heavily into English and language arts.
Yeah, so Bananagrams is a nice tool to use in your game schooling because You can play it as is, completely according to the rules, and it will work on how you fit words together. It's more of a spatial relations combined with vocabulary, really. But you can also play it in a kind of cooperative way. Hey, we're still trying to make this grid of words, but maybe this word will fit better. You know, the letters you have work really well for this. Or, because of the way the tiles and bananagrams work, just pull them out and start fooling around with them and see what kind of words you can make. See the longest word you can make with the tiles. Literally. Right. Can you find enough letters and figure out the spelling to do sesquipedalian, which is a word that means long word? Speaking of sesquipedalians, we also had a great time using Wordzy by Gil Hova. This is definitely not a word game for everyone. I want to say that right up front. But if your kids are interested in the idea of being able to make long words and see if they can beat mom and dad at making long words, then I might look into playing Wordzy. It's really simple. There's a bunch of letters laid out in front of you, and you're really just trying to make a word that uses as many of those letters as you can. There's point values and stuff like that, but that's the basic idea behind the game. And, you know, you could get a little bit of math practice in with adding up the scores at the end.
Another thing that you did, and I think this is brilliant, is to use games that were related to literature.
So I plan on doing even more of this next year.
I would expect so, because there's a lot of stuff that's out there that is related to literature that might be advanced for a third or fourth grader.
Yes. So the main thing I pointed at in my article that I wrote is the Unmatched series.
Yep.
Unmatched is a great way to dip your toe into some really classic literature, whether that's fairy tales like Little Red Riding Hood, classic legends like King Arthur or Sinbad or Robin Hood and His Merry Men, or we really love the Cobble and Fogg set, which has classic British literature, The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells, Sherlock Holmes, Dracula by Bram Stoker.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
And while those stories in and of themselves are probably still too challenging for our 10-year-old to read, because the Unmatched sets are so faithful to the source material, it's a really good way to spark interest in them. And then maybe we'll listen to some audiobooks or something like that, because that makes it a little easier than trying to just sit down and read.
Well, when you talk about Unmatched, Cobble and Fogg specifically, I think the classic one in there is Sherlock Holmes, because there's so many stories about Sherlock Holmes, and a lot of them are smoothed over, and a lot of them are less brutal, I guess, than Sherlock really was.
Yeah, I was going to say smoothed over justifiably in some cases.
Possibly,
I have a fairly complete set of Doyle's stories of Sherlock Holmes, and some of them sound really shocking to the modern ear. Not just in terms of, you know, obviously there's murder, there's theft, all of those things, right. But also in terms of racial identity and politics and wars of the time. And how he talks about them. And I was just like, this is not a story I would read with children, ever. I'm not even sure I feel comfortable reading it.
No, I understand. But I just think that, like you said, one of the things that I really like about Unmatched is that it's out there. Like, what you see is, that's what it is. Alice in Wonderland. In the first Battle of Legends set, like you mentioned, King Arthur. Medusa is in there, which is an interesting character to mix in, given all of the other ones that are there. So they really run the gamut. And the next Battle of Legends set, they've started sharing some pictures and stuff. And so that's going to be really interesting, too, to see what comes out of that.
Yeah. I've really been liking using that as an introduction to some of this more classic literature. Next year, my plan is to tackle quite a bit of Shakespeare. So if anybody has a recommendation for games that help you get into the mind of Shakespeare, the Shakespearean times, and any of his stories, I would love to have some suggestions. I'm just starting to put that together for myself now. But I know that this age range is a little young for what's considered normal for doing Shakespeare.
Sure.
But I also know that I was watching Shakespeare plays when I was like 8. So.
Nerd.
With nerdy parents.
Well,
yes.
I am going to take this opportunity to throw an extra little review in here.
All right.
Why not? A few episodes ago, we had Rajna LaRocca on the show, and we were talking about her book that had just come out, Red, White, and Whole. Near the end of the show, I encouraged Rajna to send me an advanced reader copy of Much Ado About Baseball, which she did. This book comes out on Tuesday. I just finished it, and it is wonderful. It is Much Ado About Nothing, set in a small town with two math nerds.
Nerds.
Who should get along for all sorts of reasons, but for some reason they don't. It's in the book. You'll figure it out.
Sure.
But all I'm going to say is Much Ado About Nothing is not the only Shakespeare play that plays a heavy role in the plot of this book.
All right.
It's written for a middle grade audience. I mean, I read the book in like three sittings. It's a very easy read for an adult. Like, it's not complicated at all. But it's not really for me, right? It's for someone Asher's age.
Sure.
I mean, it's got fun baseball stuff in it. Baseball's really just a backdrop to the actual narrative of the story that's going on. One of the things I really like about her writing is that she does a really good job of getting into the psyche of a kid. Mm. And the conflicts that happen between kids are the kinds of conflicts that would happen between kids.
Ah, good.
Right?
Good.
Like, it's not like an adult is looking at kids and describing the conflict. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, because then you get Terry Pratchett's idea of the sounds of children at play, which sound great until you get up close to them.
But anyway, the book is coming out the day after this podcast comes out. It's called Much Ado About Baseball. Super fun book. Great read for like that 10-year-old age. And it's kind of filled with some Shakespeare. So...
All right.
Yeah. So I'm just going to throw that in there. I said that I would offer a review on the show when I was offered the ARC, and here it is.
Highly recommended.
Highly recommended. Lots of fun.
All right. So I have plenty more to say about game schooling and how we worked games into our various curricula this year.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think it's gone pretty well, and I have a lot more ideas for next year. I think the best news that I can give to people listening is that you don't have to be a homeschooler to do game school. Just listen to what your kids are saying, play games with them, and when you find something they're curious about, help them find questions to ask, and then help them find the answers to those questions. You might learn something too.
There were many times that I would be crossing from one room into another while you were doing some homeschool stuff, and I was learning new and interesting things.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know there were spelling errors in the Declaration of Independence, for example. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That was pretty cool to find out.
But anyway. So I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Anitra, where can people find us on the internet?
Well, you can find us on various social media at FamilyGamersAA.
All right, yeah. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
Yeah, that's another place that you can see my lovely face talk to you.
You can understand what I mean when I say my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
Yeah, and there you get it in 1 minute increments. So, hey.
Love it. All right. You can also head over to the Family Gamers community. We welcomed members to the community earlier by going to thefamilygamers.com/community, and it'll bring you right into the Facebook community, or by just going to Facebook and searching for the Family Gamers community. You'll find it pretty easily. Or if you have something that you want to say to us, like Daniel did earlier, you can just email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. You can, of course, check out our merchandise, Family Gamers logo, play games with your kids, designs.
I just redesigned our mugs, by the way. So now they are white, and they have the Play Games With Your Kids and the Family Gamers logo on each side of it. So it's just
nice.
It's a little, like, I don't know, it's different. It's nice.
All right.
So yeah, you can go to thefamilygamers.com/merch to find all of that.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on whatever your podcast catcher is. Tell your friends about it. Leave us a review if you could.
The Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/FamilyGamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, that's going to be it for us this week.
All right. Sounds good. So until next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.